Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So everyone remembers that Seinfeld was the show about nothing. Well, starting tonight, you can get the highbrow version of that as the Rubin Museum offers a series of talks about nothing. Given that my next guest, Karen Armstrong, will be kicking off the series about nothing, I'm guessing the talks will focus more on spirituality and philosophy than black and white cookies and street parking. You probably know Karen Armstrong from her many books about religion, including The Case for God in Islam and A History of God. Karen, welcome back to WNYC. It's so nice to have you.
It's very nice to be back.
And I think tonight's talk is sold out. But maybe you can explain why so many people want to hear a conversation. You'll be speaking with Imam Shamsi Ali about nothing.
Well, of course, it's intriguing, isn't it? How do you talk about nothing? And yet God, as the great religions have at their best said, is nothing, because God is not another thing. God is not another being. Our speech segues very naturally into transcendence. It's what our minds do. We conceive of things for which we have no words, and for which and music, for example, takes us into a realm where there is meaning and fullness, but not a thing.
And why this conversation at this time with this imam? He heads the 96th Street Mosque in Manhattan. Is there a particular meaning to nothing or nothingness in Islam? It seems more central to Buddhism somehow.
It does. And you don't associate this kind of theology with the monotheisms, which are, after all, religions of the word. And yet all of them have this strain whereby they insist that at their best, that God is not another being, that otherwise you're creating an idol, a reality that you're creating in your own interest. Though there's quite a strong sense the Muslim theologians have said that, just like Christian and Jewish theologians like Maimonides, said that it's wrong to say that God exists. Because God does not exist like this microphone or you or me or New York City. We're talking about a different level of reality altogether. The word exist doesn't really apply.
Is that why in Hebrew you're not technically, or in some branches of Judaism, you're not technically supposed to ever state the Hebrew word for God?
Absolutely. And that is a wonderful reminder that any kind of human expression of the divine is likely to be so inadequate that it's potentially blasphemous.
Now, you're talking to this imam from the 96th Street Mosque. Things have calmed down a little bit, but you can hardly bring up Islam at all these days in New York without looking at the controversy over the Park 51 Islamic Cultural Center and mosque proposed for Lower Manhattan. You are outspoken as a big supporter of the center.
Well, I have made a statement. It would be a very sad thing, I think, for the United States to say that this center couldn't be there. After all, you have such a tremendous tradition of religious acceptance and toleration. And I think I know Imam Faisal well. We've been friends now ever since we met on the Today Show just after 9/11. And he's concerned above all with promoting understanding by insisting that anything that, like the 9/11 catastrophe, is an absolute violation of everything that Islam stands for. And so, in a sense, what could be more fitting than to have a strong statement that there's another form of Islam nearby, not actually on the spot of that absolute criminal disaster?
Somebody proposed, and I wonder if you have a thought on this, that instead of building something labeled as an Islamic cultural center or Islamic community center, that if he really wants to take this to the next level, he open an actual interfaith center. And I know he says there will be prayer spaces for people from different religions, but it's an Islamic community center with an interfaith element. Could he not take this to the next level and start an actual interfaith center at Ground Zero?
Well, it's not for me to say what Imam Faisal should do or want. Poor man, I think at this stage he's probably heartily wishing he'd never conceived this project in the first place. But I think Imam Faisal is a Sufi. And Sufis have always had a very, very strong sense that of appreciation of other religious traditions. It's quite common for a Sufi to cry aloud in ecstasy that once he's seen the divine, he's neither a Jew, a Christian, a Muslim. He's at home equally in a synagogue, a mosque, a temple, or a church, because once you've glimpsed the divine, you've left these man-made distinctions behind. And I think that is a kind of message that we need in this particularly fraught moment.
Karen Armstrong, my guest on WNYC. She will be in a conversation at the Rubin Museum tonight, though that is sold out. We understand it is the beginning of a series of what they're calling talks about nothing, based around spiritual ideas. And Karen Armstrong, the author of books like The Case for God in Islam, A Short History, and A History of God, as many of you know. You wrote the book The Case for God in response to recent books by Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and Sam Harris making the case for atheism. Sam Harris will be on the show on Wednesday to talk about his new book that makes the neuroscience case for morality. Do we need religion to be moral or compassionate?
No, I think, human beings can struggle in all kinds of ways to be moral and compassionate. I'm the last person to say that someone who doesn't have a conventional religious faith cannot aspire to morality. But people want to be religious. Certainly in Europe, religion is really off the radar screen. But Europe is beginning to look endearingly old-fashioned in its secularism. Everywhere else in the world, people are showing in all kinds of ways that they want to see religion reflected more clearly in public life. So it's a fact of life, but it needs to be understood. Because not all religion is good religion. It's like art. Not all art is good art. You can have disastrous art. Like you can have bad cooking and bad sex. Religion is very difficult to do well. And I'm the first to admit there's a lot of what the Buddhists would call unskillful religion around.
So people can be moral or compassionate without religion. Would you go so far as to say people could be spiritual? Would
yes.
you use that word?
Yes, of
without
course.
Religion, without believing in something that they consider supernatural?
Well, I mean, one of the points of my books is that believing in something that we consider supernatural is a really rather modern development. The word belief did not mean to accept a set of doctrinal propositions. It only took on this meaning in the 17th century. Up until that point, belief met love. It was related, the word beleven was related to the German liebe, beloved, or libido in Latin, desire. It was a sense of commitment, loyalty to the transcendent. And that is transcendent. A supernatural being is not transcendent. That is precisely what we'll be talking about tonight at the Rubin Museum.
Fascinating. And for people who want to hear you talk about such things, despite this being sold out, I understand that you're the artist in residence at Lincoln Center's White Light Festival this fall. What does that entail?
Oh, well, I had a lovely time at the Lincoln Center last summer in their festival about Jerusalem, where very Palestinian and Israeli and Muslim, Jewish, Christian, all playing each other sacred music about the Holy City. The Lincoln Center is about transcendence, this new festival, White Lights. And we're starting off with silence. Music, art, spirituality, and silence. And that leads us straight forward, too, into nothingness. I think good theology, for example, should be like that moment in the symphony. When the last notes die away, and there's often a very pregnant pause in the auditorium, a very full pause before the applause begins. Well, theology, it often isn't, but theology should push our minds into that space so that we can inhabit fully that silence.
And so will there be public appearances? Will you be at Lincoln Center talking about these things?
Yes, we're doing two sort of panel discussions on silence and art and spirituality and music. And we're also doing something about the martial arts, which is a new departure for me, but I think very, very interesting.
Do you practice anything?
Do I practice martial arts? I don't, no. It sounds very athletic, but it does sound interesting. It reminds me of the Tao Te Ching, whereby you make yourself small in order to vanquish your enemy. Instead of coming on with force, you put yourself in a vulnerable position, because what goes up comes down.
You have something that you call the Charter of Compassion that you have many signatories to, including Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf and his wife Daisy Khan developing the downtown center together. It says... in part, we therefore call upon all men and women to restore compassion to the center of morality and religion, to return to the ancient principle that any interpretation of scripture that breeds violence, hatred, or disdain is illegitimate. Maybe that's the heart of it. Do you think that Islam right now has a particularly difficult conversation to have with itself, considering the prominence of the jihadis, or whatever you want to call them?
Yeah, but you have to remember that the jihadis constitute a tiny minority of Muslims worldwide.
And but if you look at surveys of Muslims worldwide, there is some sentiment understanding the grievance, and that maybe, you know, the tiny, tiny fraction would ever take up arms. But a certain sympathy in some meaningful quarters for why they are what they are. Do you disagree?
Well, we are. I think the survey, the Gallup survey, shows that only 7% of the Muslims were questioned in this huge survey done by Gallup over 7 years in 35 Muslim countries actually said that the 9/11 attacks were justified. The other 93% who said that there was no justification for such an act all gave religious movement reasons for their disagreement, whereas the 7% who said their reasons were all political. Now, having said that, Muslims, where I travel extensively in the Muslim world, in the Arab world, the Middle East, a lot of interest in the Charter in the Middle East, in Pakistan, where I'll be going in February, I always find Muslims extremely eager to engage in a question of what are we doing wrong. When I go to Pakistan, my hosts say, now, don't be too polite to us. And they ask me, a Western woman, to talk to them about their religion. Now, would we invite a Pakistani over here to to New York and invite him to criticize our practice of democracy? Probably not. So while we are certainly 7% of people who agree with the jihadis is too much.
We have literally 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. What do you hope the charter will lead to? Almost an interfaith religion?
No, not an interfaith religion. The charter says that you don't need that. Every faith has the compassionate ethos at its core. But to bring that compassionate ethos to the core, to change the conversation and counter the voices of extremism. And we've already taken off. We've got 165 partners in every region of the globe. And enormously exciting.
You have a website for that?
www.charterforcompassion.org.
charterforcompassion.org. Karen Armstrong, her talk tonight is a talk about nothing. Thank you very much for coming on and talking about something.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.